From the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning, I am Tom Cavanaugh.
And I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And you are listening to TopCast, the Teaching Online Podcast. Hi, Kelvin.
Hey, Tom. I was just thinking.
Sorry to interrupt your revelry here.
No, I was thinking, I like podcasts, and I like teaching online, and I like TopCast.
It's like peanut butter and chocolate combining into just delicious goodness.
Yeah, you used peanut butter and I went to jelly. I mean, now I'm doing like, you know, word association. I'm being psychoanalyzed. I'm thinking, why? Why did I go peanut butter and jelly and not peanut butter and chocolate?
Maybe we're close to lunchtime.
That could be it. That could be it. Any rate, but I digress.
You don't say. Well, we may not have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches here.
No, we don't.
But we do have beverages.
We do have beverages. We have coffee, Tom.
Coffee. What a surprise. I'm shocked to have coffee.
Well, you know, you would think you'd pick up on this pattern by now.
I'm not bright, but I'm persistent. Yes.
So you're probably wondering what this is you're drinking.
I am wondering what this is I'm drinking.
It's neither peanut butter, chocolate, nor jelly. It is a Guatemala San Isidro from Vessel Coffee Roasters via our colleague Ben Whitmore in the Spokane, Washington area.
Hello, Ben. Thank you for the coffee.
Yes, indeed. It's tasty, I think. This is I think you could say this is true. See if you follow this train of thought. The test of a high-end coffee roaster is in the cup. However, there are things that can get in the way of that, namely, like, you know, me. You know, the person doing the coffee grinding and the coffee brewing. But assuming that somebody like me doesn't screw it up, you can really taste the outcome of the coffee roasting process.
Yeah, it's so good. But then, you know, you get a monkey like me across the table from you with some unsophisticated coffee palate who cannot appreciate all of those nuances and textures.
Yeah.
But all I know is it's good.
Well, it's better than taking a swig and going, oh,
true.
That's horrible.
True dat.
Yeah.
It's very good. We appreciate Ben passing it along.
Thank you. And we'll put, if you're interested in Vessel Coffee Roasters, we'll put a little thing in the show notes. You can check that out yourself. But I tried to make a little connection there for today's topic. Tom, do you see kind of a segue there somewhere? Test is in the cup, you know.
Oh,
outcomes.
I see. Okay. Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a long way around.
Wow,
Calvin.
Yeah. I've almost failed that test. See, you're like, do you see connection? No, I don't see anything.
I know what the
it's
topic is today.
And I can't make a connection between that.
But I think I get it now.
Okay.
So, you know, I can't believe we've been podcasting for as long as we have, and we have not really directly addressed this subject.
Yeah, it's true.
It is one of the more common questions that I get.
Yeah.
And probably you too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I stand up in front of faculty during faculty development, or I talk to members of the community, or, you know, just anyone. When I went on the Tavis Smiley show, it was one of the first questions I got asked. And the question is, don't they cheat online?
That's right.
And I always have to take a breath and think about who I'm talking to before I answer that question.
That's right.
So
how do you normally answer that question?
Generally, the answer is no more than they do face-to-face.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, and it's true, right? At least based on the research. And we've done quite a bit of it. I'll give Chuck Jubin and Patsy Moskal and some of the grad students that they've worked with credit for compiling some of these you know, annotated bibliographies of the literature. And we've also looked at some data here.
Yep.
So, I don't know, last year or so, I had asked our academic integrity office, our student conduct office, to give me a breakdown of the reported cases by modality. And there weren't that many by percentage. There was fewer cases by percentage for online learning than we have percentage of online learning in general.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. The proportions don't match in the way that you would expect them to,
now,
things being equal.
To be fair, these are reported cases.
That's right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that some shenanigans weren't happening. It's just they didn't get reported. But I found that encouraging.
Yeah.
Right? And we do some things to try to mitigate, you know, academic integrity issues beyond just, I guess, well, maybe we should categorize it, right?
Yeah.
So there are technological blunt force solutions, like catch 'em, kind of solutions.
Yeah, right.
And then there are the kind of, you know, proactive assessment design kind of solutions.
Yes.
So I don't
the
know.
Latter would be our preference, generally speaking, yeah. And we can talk about why that.
Well, you
is,
want to start there? Do you want to?
Yeah.
Talk a
why don't
about
we
that?
Why don't we talk about that? Right. So, man, it's hard. I don't do pithy, Tom. You know, it's there is a school of thought that says when you go online, you try to replicate what you do in the classroom, and I'm not necessarily a fan of that mindset. But
yeah, me neither.
But under that umbrella mindset, there is sort of this, let's replicate how we deal with learning assessment, which, you know, maybe the quippy response to that, the classification is not well. we deal with it not well, right? So we have Scantron, multiple choice exams or whatever a couple times, and, you know.
Or the analog for that online, which is just the multiple choice in the LMS.
Exactly. And what we've seen historically, you know, 20 plus years of online education is from the literature, and I imagine you see this in your teaching practice, I see it in mine, that really when you try to bring about something that's higher level, that's more involving of students, that has them actually producing something meaningful, that's really an outcome of what they can really, how they can really apply what they're learning in the class, that's much more powerful, it's much more involving. You get to know them as people, they get to know you as people, it's a much more human process. So I would call that all, and also to be quippy, there's what we might refer to as higher order thinking skills, or HOTS, and lower order thinking skills, or LOTS. And so, you know, we're better off kind of at the higher levels of Bloom's taxonomy of learning objectives, right?
So yeah. So if I have more than a you know, an elevator ride to answer that question about, you know, don't they cheat on?
Yeah, you hope I'm not on the elevator.
It better be, as John Hitt, our president, said. I hope it's a tall building.
That's right. That's right. That's all I ever hope for. Don't give me a short elevator ride.
Usually, I'll try to go to the next thing, which is, you know, they don't cheat anymore online than they do face to face. But what we try to do, if you know, we can, and it is part of our faculty development and the work that our instructional designers and others do with faculty, is to look at authentic assessments.
Yes.
As opposed to sort of, as you said, the lower order Bloom's just knowledge recall, cognitive recall kinds of assessments. And so I refer to them as the P's. Mm-hmm. So you have like progressive papers, you know, various drafts. You have portfolios, projects.
Ooh, Tom, you're very quippy. Look at you.
Yeah, and there was one other too that's just escaping me that I had. It was another P.
Progressive papers, portfolios,
projects. And there was something else, but I'll think of it anyway. But there was like four of them.
I've not heard you say that before. I like that. I'm going to steal that.
And the idea is to try to, you know, have the students produce things that that only they could.
Yeah.
You know, that you couldn't look over at your you know, roommate and have their answer be the same as yours.
Yeah.
Especially if you're reviewing drafts of a paper, it's really hard unless you're having somebody else write that paper for you over and over again to kind of cheat on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, if somebody's doing that, that's not a modality specific issue.
No.
You can do that in a face-to-face class.
That's right. And let's just do this off and trot it out thing as well. Because it's related, right? The whole thing of, well, how do you know that the people doing the work online are the people who sign up for the class? Well, how do you know the person sitting in the physical classroom is the person who signed up for the class unless you are checking IDs at the door?
Right.
Right. Yeah. So we don't necessarily hold face-to-face to the same standard either.
No, we don't. But there are actually some fairly straightforward things that you can do online to ensure identity, including, you know, videos and IDs and other kinds of things that actually are easier to facilitate online than they are face-to-face.
Right.
If you had a lecture class of 100 people and you had to check IDs for every single one of them, there's half your class, right, spent trying to look at people's identification. You could do the same thing online. Everybody do it on their own, and it wouldn't take 10 seconds to go through it.
That's right. But speaking of that, right, there's that gets us into a little bit of like proctoring. Proctoring's a big thing, right?
It is. Boy, talk about a big industry.
Yeah, and, you know, taking nothing away from anybody. I mean, more power to you. Make the better mousetrap and so forth. It's just I find myself – I think that is part of the equation. I think you have to go there.
Yep.
But
I think it needs to be part of the portfolio of solutions that you offer. But I don't think in and of itself it's a magic bullet.
Because that's all you're doing. If you're just saying, okay, we're going to take the same old learning assessment, the same old test, and we're just going to come up with some efficient and affordable way to have a person or a robot or something look at Tom taking the test and figure that doesn't look like he cheated, then we'll go, okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. That, boy, we can do better than that.
Yeah, I agree. And our colleague here, Joel Hartman, likes to describe it as whack-a-mole.
Yeah,
right. We can keep throwing various new and improved technologies at students, but students are awfully clever. And, you know, it's just every time we whack one down, they're going to pop up with some new thing somewhere else. And we've all heard the crazy stories of the proctored exams where the camera accidentally falls over or whatever, and then you see all the answers pasted on the wall.
Pay no attention to the equations behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, I didn't, you know, they were cheating, but you couldn't see it because the camera wasn't pointed at it until it was too late. You know, yeah, there's all kinds of ways you can cheat. What I always tell faculty is even if we're using a proctoring solution, it's not some sort of a card that allows you to suddenly do closed book tests online.
Right.
That's still a bad practice.
Right. No, that's exactly right. I remember talking to this associate dean once a few years back, and he was sort of in charge of kind of assessment at a large level for his college. And you could tell he's always on the lookout. How are things going? And, well, you know, found another method. And I just said, seems like they're coming up with those, kind of the whack-a-mole thing, right?
Yeah.
It seems like they're coming up with those just as fast as you can detect them. Yes, I know. But he was looking at it as, I don't know, job security or what. He was on the hunt, right? And I'm thinking, boy, I think I'd give up that hunt and go a different direction somehow.
Yeah.
But at any rate.
Well, we have developed, I know there are a million different proctoring solutions and different companies and partners that you can you know, go into business with to do live proctoring or not live proctoring or whatever.
Right.
We actually have a combination here on campus. We have one program that does use live proctoring. But for the rest of the campus, we have built our own video proctoring solution that we've embedded into the LMS. And it's not live proctored.
Right.
But it does give faculty and administrators a picture of every test and where it's used. Of the student taking the test, and they have to hold up an ID, and we compare it to the ID in the card office to ensure it's their face, and then we're working on some programming to do some automatic facial recognition and some other kinds of stuff.
All for free, no charge to the student other than just having the hardware.
My point is that some faculty take that really seriously. I've heard of some faculty that even in a large class will spend the weekend watching every single video. And it's a
bit alive.
Overkill for me. Yeah, that is definitely the exception. Our faculty
don't
generally do that. You know, for us, it's been a really useful tool when other factors have pointed to something suspicious.
Yeah.
And so then we can go in and review.
Right.
Or they can, or some combination. And then we triangulate that, right? Because I think, actually, online learning offers some affordances for prevention and enforcement that face-to-face learning just simply doesn't offer.
Yeah.
So we've checked IP addresses, we've checked the timestamps of different people taking tests, we've checked all kinds of things to kind of either tell faculty, something weird did happen here, you may want to investigate or report or whatever. We don't generally make judgments, but we'll give all the facts that we find. Or in some cases, we've exonerated students. So like, this student's telling the truth. Their test crashed for whatever reason.
Yeah, and you know this. I mean, I sit on our academic integrity panel and hear cases related to academic misconduct. And there, too, it's a preponderance of evidence kind of thing. So as an individual hearing officer or as a part of a panel, you listen to everything, you look at all the evidence, and you make a determination of more likely than not, because that's the evidence standard, something happened or something didn't happen. And so all of that helps. If you've got documentation, that's where the decision will be. But, you know, as we're talking about this, I keep thinking, you know, it's kind of like an input versus output thing, right? The stuff that we talked about at the beginning of our conversation, design, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. dealing with higher order thinking skills, designing activities that call upon students to do all those P's that you talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a much better place to be than dealing with outputs, to be chasing down the results of something that was not necessarily well thought through to start off with. Because it will be whack-a-mole. You'll never catch everything. Right. Gotta catch them all. Pokemon, that was your other P.
That must have been the fourth P. Pokemon. Of course. How could I have forgotten Pokemon?
But, you know, I'm reminded of you cited Joel Hartman. I'll cite Chuck Jubin. Chuck has often quipped that why do we expect technology to make up for a lack of ethics?
Yeah.
You know?
Drop the mic.
Yeah. But it is funny how we paint ourselves into that corner, right? And we got to deal with the ethical thing, that's a bigger deal. And we take that seriously here at UCF. I'm sure other institutions do. You know, some institutions have honor codes.
Right.
We have our creed and,
right.
and integrity is a big thing. And, you know, that's harder stuff, but it's more important stuff than... You got to do the technology stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not going to solve everything.
No, it's not. And even honor codes. In years past, that has been seen as, you know, the primary solution because it creates a culture of integrity. But if you look at some recent examples of schools that have really strong honor codes, like the service academies.
Mm-hmm.
There have been cheating scandals
right.
at the service academies, and you don't have a stronger honor code than you do at places like that. So no place is immune from you know, students trying to get an edge.
Yes, and that makes me think of something that we should probably note, right? Not to excuse any kind of cheating ever, but that particular example makes me think of, here's a phrase that's so important, high stakes.
Yeah.
If the stakes are high, incredibly high, perhaps, there is a fundamental structured incentive to cheat, one might say.
Yeah.
Now, depending on one's personal morals and ethics, right? I mean, it's not an incentive to cheat if you're like, no, that's not an option.
Right.
But if you're and then the stakes are higher, you know, the numbers don't lie. I can tell you from going through many academic misconduct hearings, where the stakes were super high, students will tend more to be tempted that direction.
It's a cost-benefit in their mind.
It is, and it's horrible. It's sad. But so when you're designing learning activities online, and learning activities, assignments, and assessments can all be the same thing, or they can be different things, but as you're designing those things, to de-emphasize the high-stakes nature, iterative assessment,
yep.
I mean, that's a very helpful approach. But it's harder. It takes more thoughtful, deliberative design to get there.
Yeah, and maybe we can just spend a moment, like, kind of looking forward. I totally agree. And you know, the days of midterm and final, and that's your whole grade.
Right.
I think are behind us now, hopefully. And you know, I've had conversations with faculty and department chairs about the use of adaptive learning as not just a really good, you know, pedagogical strategy to meet students where they are, give them extra support if they need it, allow them to accelerate, but also as a strategy to mitigate collusion and cheating because it's so personalized that everybody gets a different experience. And you really can't cheat. And even if you did work together, all you're doing is helping each other learn the concepts, but you're going to have a different answer set than the person sitting next to you, which I think is a really interesting byproduct benefit of something like adaptive learning.
Right.
Our math department, we may have talked about this on the podcast in the past, but our math chair has talked about this concept of a course with no tests, where through adaptive learning, the students are just continually assessed as they go through the program and as these little micro assessments.
Yep.
And by the time the course is over, you don't need to give them a test because you know what they know
right.
on everything that they've been assessed along.
That's right.
How do you cheat in something like that? It's really hard, especially with variableized questions where everybody gets a different number set. It's almost impossible to cheat in something like that.
That's right. Now, honestly, philosophically, you can do the same thing really without technology as well. It's just a lot harder.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
scale.
It's
harder to scale, yeah.
That's right. But the philosophy, I think, is broadly applicable. But the technology, if you apply the philosophy to it, can get you to some really desirable places at a larger scale.
Can I come back to something you said earlier, which
Please.
Was, and this is often what I default to, and I try to stop myself now.
Mm-hmm.
When we're asked the question about, you know, well, don't students cheat online?
Yeah.
And, I mean, and the stats do show that they don't cheat online anymore than
right.
they do face to face. Maybe some of the kinds of cheating might be a little different.
Right.
You know, what Chuck and his team have talked, you know,
yeah, yeah.
panic cheating,
yeah, yeah,
plan
yeah. right,
cheating,
right,
and all
right.
these different categories.
Yeah, right.
But the incidence of cheating is no greater online than it is face to face. But when we say, well, you're holding online learning to a higher standard than mm-hmm. you are face to face because you're not checking IDs at the door, as many times as I have said that, and I have said that plenty,
mm-hmm.
it's never worked, right?
I know, right? Isn't
it's
that funny?
Never swayed anybody. I've never had anybody put their hand to their chin and say, oh, you, well, I never thought of it like that before.
I actually have, in fairness, had
really?
A couple people go, huh, but they're more thoughtful people than the folks you talk to.
Yeah, the cretins that I associate with. Yeah.
But continue on.
Yeah. Well, I just have tried to, at least if I mention it, not dwell on it, because
uh-huh.
I don't think that ends the
right.
argument,
well,
because I don't think it's
sure.
persuasive.
Right.
So I think it's time to kind of move past
yeah.
Move past that as a defense and to talk more proactively about
mm-hmm.
the kinds of things we are doing
right.
that I think are better than the face-to-face environment. You know, some of these strategies we've already touched on.
Well, that's a good point. We talk about like a different standard and a higher standard and better standard. It's a good strategy, Tom. Lean into that.
Yeah.
Embrace it and say, yes, our standards are higher online than they are in face-to-face.
Yeah, yeah. And it kind of goes back to something we did talk about. This was a long time ago, about the no significant difference
yeah,
literature
sure. mm-hmm.
where when people ask, is online learning as good as face-to-face, which is kind of a mm-hmm. derivative of this
yeah, yeah,
cheating
right.
question.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer that we have used in the past is based on the corpus of literature on no significant difference. Well, just telling people that it's as good as face-to-face, I think probably isn't good enough anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to talk about how it could be better in some
yeah.
cases.
Yeah.
You know, not to say face-to-face is bad, right?
Right, of course not. Of course not.
Because it's great. But there are certain affordances that the online environment give you in certain situations and contexts that can make the experience more effective or better or whatever, depending. And I think the same mm-hmm. thing exists in the world of academic integrity.
I think that's right. I've often said that when you go online, you make the formerly implicit more explicit. You make the formerly invisible more visible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of what you're talking about. You have at your disposal a lot of evidence and a lot of opportunities to make visible things that weren't there before. So you can enact that higher standard, whether it's data, analytics, visual records, whatever. It's different than what you've had face-to-face. So you might as well lean into it and embrace it. So that's a good point.
Yeah, people are not going to stop asking that question.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think we need to be prepared with some answers depending upon, you know, who you're talking to. And you know what? You know, we've got a forum for feedback on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And I would welcome people to share how they answer this question about
yeah.
academic integrity with us and with the community. Because I think collectively it would be good for us to kind of have some responses that that are not, you know, feeding into sort of myths and misperceptions.
Yeah, so Tom just gave you homework, folks. And so if you go to the Topcast website, topcast.online.ucf.edu, find this episode and scroll down to the bottom, there's a comments box there, and you can type away to your heart's content on how you've addressed these issues. But our time and our coffee are growing
yeah,
thin,
I've seen
Tom.
The bottom of my cup, alas. It's very good. Thank you, Ben.
Yes. Yeah, indeed. Thanks very much for that. Very tasty coffee. So as we get close to wrapping up, can I take a stab at where I think we're kind of landing this
land
topic?
The plane, mm-hmm. Kelvin. Landing gear is down.
Disagree if you'd like. And there's, you know, gosh, there's so much more we could talk about here.
This is more than a one episode podcast topic, that's for sure.
We'll throw some supporting resources on the show notes page and all, but we probably need to come back and revisit other things. We haven't really talked about things like writing higher ordered multiple choice exam items and all manner of zoomed in on the ground. Ways of designing for higher order thinking and all the P's you talked about. But that'll be for another day. Here's my stab here. Academic Integrity Online is more of a learning assessment and personal ethics issue than it is a technology issue. So our approaches to solving those issues ought to match the challenges. That is, we ought to take them on as a personal ethics issue and as a learning assessment design issue rather than as a implement technology thing. Would you agree?
I would agree. I think it's a multi-pronged solution. It's not any single, you know, strategy that you employ is going to address this.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So maybe that's a good place to wrap it up. Until next time, for Topcast, I'm Tom.
I'm Kelvin.
See ya. Thank you.